This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Welcome to episode 2, where we review Black Sabbath. And no, we're not reviewing the legendary Godfathers of Heavy Metal. Instead, we're looking at the 1963 film, specifically the Italian version. Look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century, that's 20th. We post our next movie selection there, you can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. We have mentioned this before on this podcast, but our daughter raises goats. We sent 3 of them off to be bred, and then this past week, one of the mamas gave birth to 2 babies.
Oh, they're very cute. They're very opposite of one another. There's a black one and a brown one, and the brown one... So the mama goat has these funny little short ears, because she's like a mixed breed, right?
Mm-hmm.
I call them Shrek ears, because that's literally what they look like. They're just those little, like, sprouts off of the top corners of her head, basically.
Mm-hmm.
If you have corners, if you're a goat, you kind of have corners on your head, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Very angular.
Yeah. So anyhow, but the daddy goat has floppy ears. He's a Nubian. You can Google that. They have long floppy ears. So the brown baby, she has the little Shrek ears, just like mom. And then the black baby has not quite Nubian floppy ears, but she has like this midway floppy ear. I don't know. They're kind of like Scooby-Doo's ears, how they kind of flop and then they kind of stick out at weird angles.
Yeah. It's real cute.
It's very cute. It's very cute. So our daughter being the little rock and roll lover, I say little, she just turned 14. So I guess she's not little.
Yeah.
But anyhow, she, the mama of these goats is named Dora, but her first baby, I don't know, several years ago, she named Nora J after Nora Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And so since this same mama had 2 more girls, she decided she's going to go with the female vocalist theme. So the black one is Joan Jett, we call Joan, and the little brown one is Gwen Stefani, and we call her Gwen. Actually, today I caught myself calling her Gwenny, because she's so cute. You can't just call her Gwen.
Yeah. Gwen and Joan are kind of like older lady names.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird to call baby goat Gwen and Joan.
I'm sure Gwen Stefani does not appreciate that at all. Not that she's going to hear this, but...
Well, as I mentioned before, we are reviewing the movie Black Sabbath, and this inspired a good, interesting question for us to talk about today, and that is, what is your favorite band that's named after a movie or a movie reference?
Mm-hmm.
I'll throw a few out there for you, because instantly, the 2 that came to mind were Black Sabbath, of course. We just saw this movie, and Black Sabbath is a classic band that I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is White Zombie, a very popular metal band from the 1990s, which featured Rob Zombie on vocals. The band's namesake was an old Bela Lugosi film, also called White Zombie.
But other than those 2, when you asked this question, like, I literally could think of 0 bands that were named after movies. So you had to do a little searching for me.
So I'm going to throw some at you.
All right.
The band Duran Duran was named after a character in the movie Barbarella.
See, I had no idea that came from that movie.
Yeah.
And I've never seen that movie.
Well, it's one we could actually review on this podcast if we want to at a future date. And then Fine Young Cannibals, I didn't realize was named after the 1960 film All the Fine Young Cannibals, starring Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood. So yeah, we'll have to see that one.
Oh, okay.
Of course, the Misfits, I've always known about the punk rock band, but they are named after Marilyn Monroe's final film.
I did not know that.
There's a band called Atreyu, actually. They're named after the hero from the movie The Neverending Story. So that was a surprise.
How current is the band Atreyu? Are they out right now? Is this an older band?
No, the songs I played for you are like 2021.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Is Neverending Story making a comeback? Because, like, our kids now know a boy named Atreyu, which is the first, other than the movie character.
Yeah.
I've never met anyone named Atreyu. So I'm like, well, obviously his parents are close to our age.
Right. And then we have the band Veruca Salt, obviously a reference to Willy Wonka.
Yes.
I've totally forgotten about that band.
I liked, you know, one of their songs I could remember hearing a lot as a teen.
Uh-huh. Pennywise, of course, a reference to It.
Ugh. I saw that as a child and hated it. I have not seen the new one.
Actually, I haven't either. But then you have Goldfinger, named after the 3rd Bond film.
Yeah.
Save Ferris.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Wu-Tang Clan. I was like, what? Where did that come from? The Wu got their name from the classic Shaolin and Wu-Tang movie collection. It's a series of Chinese movies about the art of martial arts released back in 1983.
Oh, okay.
So of the bands I've mentioned, which one would you say is your favorite?
Well, I mean, none of those bands, some of them I literally have never heard of or never heard any of their songs until you played some for me over dinner. And the ones that I do know, you know, they're not like the top of my listening list, my playlist, I should say. Uh-huh. So, you know, Duran Duran, I like Duran Duran. Yeah. That's a good 80s, 90s throwback, right?
Yeah.
So I probably put them at the top of my list. I like some Black Sabbath, but I'm not like a hardcore Aussie fan, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
So, and the rest of those, well, there's a little bit of White, I listened to White Zombie when I was, you know,
back in the day,
in the 90s. Veruca Salt had like one or two songs that I'm familiar with mm-hmm. that I thought were fun. I think I liked their look. I remember MTV, I think, when I was a teen playing mm-hmm. a couple of their videos.
Right.
I thought they looked cool. But, you know, it wasn't something I stuck with.
One thing I think would be really cool, because I can't say a lot of these bands I just love.
Right.
It would be cool if they did a big concert, you know, where they come and play a set. Like back in the
all
day.
All these people together?
Yeah, maybe not all of them, but like a group of these. So, like, Save Ferris kind of has that ska sound.
Okay, yeah,
that was a lot of fun. But I don't know if I would want, I can't say they're my favorite band on this list.
No, no.
But it would be fun to hear six or seven songs.
I forgot that you did play me a Save Ferris song. And they were ska. I had some ska roots back in the day. That's mm-hmm. fun. That's the happiest sounding of all of these bands, really.
Yeah, they really are.
They're all kind of rough or downers or somber, at least.
Mm-hmm. It's odd. Back in the 60s, there was this big rivalry between Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath. And you kind of had to choose one camp or the other.
Oh, yeah.
And then when we were growing up in the 90s, that was still happening. That was still a thing. And I was camp Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
But over the years, Black Sabbath kept, you know, speaking to me.
Right.
There's something to be said for being the best band in the world at one thing. And that slow, kind of dirty rock, roots of metal sound was Black Sabbath. And yeah, they were awesome at it.
Right.
So I would lean towards Black Sabbath, but what about you? Would you say Duran Duran then?
Yeah. Yes. Young Kim would probably go with Duran Duran out of this mix.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if I had to pick now, if I had to listen to one of these on the regular now, I'd probably go with Save Ferris because I'm just not as angsty.
Right.
As I was then.
Yeah.
And ska is a little more up, you know?
Ska is kind of like a party sound.
Yeah. It's fun. It's happy. It's perky most of the time.
Yeah. What happened to ska anyway? It was like big for 2 years and then just went away.
I will say, talking about our kids bringing stuff back and us liking that our kids are getting into stuff that we liked. Our two older ones, I think both have picked up on Mighty Mighty Boss Tones a little bit. They've mm-hmm. added them to, which I loved ska back in the day. And
yeah.
You remember all the Gap ads with like the big band sound and people were wearing khakis and doing swing dancing. And
right.
Like that was just a fun time.
It was fun.
It was fun. So I appreciate that our kids have picked up on some of that. But I've also noticed that, again, just not as angsty as I was back in the day. This is your spoiler warning. If you have not watched Black Sabbath yet, here's your chance to hit pause and come back and join us later. All right, so today's movie is Black Sabbath, a 1963 Italian filmmaker Mario Bava piece. It involves three short stories, and IMDb says Boris Karloff hosts a trio of horror stories concerning a stalked call girl, a vampire-like monster who preys on his family, and a nurse who is haunted by her ring's rightful owner. Dun, dun, dun. Interestingly enough, Rotten Tomatoes gives this an 88% on the tomato meter, and the audience score is 75%.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting that the tomato meter guys are higher than the audience on this one. Not by much.
Well, I don't know how much the average Joe knows about this film. But I think it was important. It definitely was an influence on Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, I could see that.
There's actually two versions that exist, an American version and an Italian version. Please note, the one we're covering is the Italian version, which was the director's vision for this.
Okay.
But one piece of piece of trivia, of course, if you didn't figure it out from our opening segment, the film served as an inspiration for the naming of the heavy metal band Black Sabbath.
Right.
So they used to be called Earth, and I think it was a documentary I watched of the actual band Black Sabbath talking about they would play in an old theater and there wouldn't be anybody there to see them, or they had small crowds. But next door, you know, you'd have this long line of people ready to watch these old gothic horror films.
Okay.
And so I feel like they, or it sounded like they took their inspiration. Maybe they didn't just love this movie in particular, but they wanted to get something that was more of this horror theme.
They knew that when the words Black Sabbath were up on the marquee, people showed up.
That's right.
So they wanted to steal some of that crowd.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so I feel like based on that, you know, documentary that I watched, they started tending towards the dark, you know, and the occult. Mm-hmm. They were trying to tell these dark stories.
Was Black Sabbath not really dark before the band? Dark before this renaming?
Right. They were called Earth, and they were a blues band.
What?
Yeah.
Ozzy Osbourne had a blues band.
Yeah. You know, it probably wasn't his destiny to be a blues singer.
I can't even. No, this does not compute.
Well, tell us about the telephone.
There's actually, when you watch this film, there's a little bit of an intro and then a little bit of an epilogue at the end, right?
Oh, yeah.
So Boris Karloff, who I know from The Grinch, I guess he does the non-singing voice of The Grinch in the right. old cartoon that we all grew up watching, right?
Oh, yeah. And, of course, Frankenstein from the Universal movies.
Yeah, Universal Frankenstein, all
and
that.
And The Mummy.
Right. So good old Boris Karloff is our intro man. He's our hype man, right? Mm-hmm. He comes on the stage and tells us we're going to see these three tales of horror or whatever. Right. It felt a little like Vincent Price kind of intro or along that line.
Yeah.
So the first story we get into, does it have a name?
What's the telephone.
Oh, it is called The Telephone. Okay. So this one to me felt the least gothic of the three, but I liked this one. And I probably... Maybe I shouldn't give this away now.
Go for it.
All right. But I probably like this one the most.
Okay.
Because I felt like this was most reminiscent to a modern horror tale. Yeah. Like what you would see. I mean, I kept watching it thinking like, this is where we got the idea for I Know What You Did Last Summer and Scream. And or not all the ideas, but what's the movie? I'm showing my lack of horror knowledge. There's, you know, like someone's calling from inside the house. Maybe all horror movies have that. Oh, yeah.
Well, Black Christmas does that.
Okay. Yeah. So this was very much that like someone keeps calling you and it's very much like they're in your house or they know what you're, they can see you somehow, whether they're in your house or they have some sort of spy camera, which obviously this is 1963, so probably not a spy camera in your house.
Right. But yeah, this lady gets a phone call from someone and based on what they're saying on the phone, it sounds like they can see her.
Yeah. They know what she's wearing. They know that like she gets out of the shower or something in a bathrobe. And when the person is on the phone speaking to her, like she covers her leg and there's, oh, why'd you cover your leg? You know?
Yeah.
And they're very, from the get go, whoever's on the phone is saying, I want to kill you.
Right.
Like you're beautiful. I can see you. I know everything you're doing, but I'm here to kill you.
Yes. Yeah. Very creepy. And I think it really plays on all of our basic fears of like a home invasion situation.
Right. Absolutely.
So invasion of your privacy, and then even worse, like coming in to my house and killing me.
Yeah, being in your space.
Right. This one was definitely spooky, but more of a, I will say this, because we'll talk about the others. I was in a constant state of tension.
Yeah.
Throughout this whole segment.
The tension was brilliant in this segment, for sure. And that's what made it feel so like modern day thriller to me. It's like, oh my gosh. Like, we've seen this.
Yes. And it had some twists in it. Like, when you hear the voice, it's obviously, it sounds like a male voice.
Right.
And then about midway through, they, you know, unveil that it's actually a female.
Yeah.
Who's ticked off. I mean, it's kind of unclear what the nature of the relationship was previously, but they were clear. It was clearly they were close.
There had been some tragic falling out.
Some falling
out. They
hate
each other.
And this lady neighbor that she's called is not only ticked off, but she may come over and kill you now.
Yes. Well, okay, so let's talk about that, because there's also a twist element here that was very M. Night Shyamalan kind of. Mm-hmm. Because the girl that's in the house and keeps getting the creepy phone calls, mm-hmm. I don't remember her name, but whatever her name was.
Her name was Rosie?
Rosie. And then it was...
And Mary's the friend.
The friend she calls, mm-hmm. or the ex-friend. Right. Okay, so she's freaking out, and it seems like she has no one else to call. So she gets on the phone and calls Mary and says, I know things were bad between us, whatever, but I need you. Like, you have to be here. You have to come and help me.
Yeah.
And then we find out as we watch, Mary's the one that's been making the creepy calls.
Yeah.
And it even looks like Mary's going to try and poison her or something. She's got a ring with like a hidden capsule of stuff in it. She dumps in her drink. And
she shows
like,
up with like a big blade and like, what are you doing with that? And then she tucks the blade under the girl's pillow.
She's like, you'll feel safer basically if you sleep with this knife, kitchen knife under your pillow. I mean, the whole time you're like, you called this lady for help and she's going to kill you. Like, this was the wrong person to call. So it kind of had, again, that was I felt like a very modern twist. It wasn't a super gothic idea. It felt modern.
Nothing supernatural about it. It was all just like bad guy, thriller. Good girl type situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And what we haven't mentioned in the midst of this is she's called this friend who clearly there's bad blood with to help her out. And now it looks like unbeknownst to Rosie, Mary's going to kill her. Mm-hmm. And we see some sort of like cutting from a newspaper that some guy who were never explained, but he must have had a bad relationship with the two of them. There's some sort of love triangle, something. He has gotten out of jail.
Yeah.
We see the newspaper clipping. He's escaped. People are hunting for him. And so you're thinking like, well, is he going to come and kill her? Mm-hmm. Like, but now Mary's here and Mary looks like she's going to kill her. You really kept guessing the whole time.
And there's actually a really good shot where they zoom in on the blinds and there's a male eyeballs.
Yeah.
And it didn't look like Mary.
Can you tell with their male eyeballs? I don't know. It's hard to say.
It didn't look like Mary's eyes. It looked like some crazy guy.
It didn't look like someone with mascara and eyeliner. Because let me tell you, these Italian women, their eyeliner game is on point.
Yes.
In every one of these shots, I'm like, wow, this is like 60s perfection, the winged eyeliner. Anyhow.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess it must have been male eyeballs peeking through the blinds because he did not have his winged eyeliner.
Right. You know, I did look on YouTube. There is the American version on YouTube. They went in a supernatural direction with the American version.
Oh, really?
And Frank, who's the guy that in this version is a, escaped convict, he's like a ghost.
Oh.
And so that note that you described that got slipped under the door, instead of being a newspaper clipping, it's a white sheet of paper, and then an invisible hand writes a message to her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I could actually see that story fitting better with the other two in this trilogy.
Yeah.
Because they all have more of a the other two have more of a supernatural, monster-y type thing going, whereas this one is very much a modern thriller.
Yeah. But it really doesn't make sense if Frank is a ghost.
Because
in the end, Rosie stabs him in the stomach and murders him.
We think Mary's going to kill her. She gives her basically like sleeping something to make her sleep. Rosie goes to sleep. And then Mary's writing a note at the desk, like explaining, like, I wanted to kill you. This is because of whatever happened in the past, blah, blah, blah. And while she's writing that note, bad guy Frank, who's broken out of jail, slips in, strangles Mary while she's writing the note, and then realizes, oh crap, I thought I strangled Rosie. This is actually Mary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's good or bad in his mind, but
he was pretty happy about killing her too.
Well, yeah, it seemed that way. But then Rosie wakes up and remembers she's still got that kitchen knife under her pillow.
Yeah.
And takes care of Frank.
Yeah.
And now she's left alone with two dead bodies in her apartment.
And she's crying. Weird. But, you know, like the good girl wins, I guess.
Yeah. Good girl wins.
So, let's talk about standouts and setbacks. So this is a little something different this year than last year.
You changed it.
That's right. But basically the bright points we're calling standouts and some of the lower points we're calling setbacks.
Mm-hmm.
The first standout I'll mention, the performances of our two leading actresses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to kill their names. I always do.
Well, they're Italian, right?
Michelle Mercier that plays Rosie.
That actually looks like a French name on paper, but who knows?
And she might be French, you know. And then Lydia Alfonsi plays Mary. And I felt like they played really well off each other.
I mean, this is their show. It's like a two-man show. That's it. Frank shows up at the very end, and all he has to do is strangle somebody and die.
Yeah.
That's it.
I felt really scared for Rosie.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of that tension, you know, mm-hmm. you want to see Rosie survive, but it's pretty creepy. And you know, you're watching this old scary movie and you feel like Rosie's probably going to die at the end.
Right, right. Things don't normally work out well for the damsel in distress.
No,
right?
They really don't. But she pulls through.
She does.
So another standout, this really has a modern horror feel.
Exactly.
It felt a little out of place with some of the ghost stories that follow,
mm-hmm.
but this was really cool. It was kind of a timeless psychological thriller.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen this backbone to a story multiple times in other thrillers and horror films.
Yeah. Do you have any standouts?
It is really suspenseful. Like, they nail the suspense factor here. From the get-go, this pretty girl comes home to her apartment, the phone rings, and we didn't mention this earlier, but it rings several times and she doesn't get to it to answer it before it stops ringing. Mm-hmm. And then a few times she answers it and nobody says anything. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like this constant incremental build of like, get to the phone already. And then it's like, somebody answer her, you know?
Yeah.
And then the creepo starts saying, you know, I'm going to kill you or whatever.
Right.
So I think they just nailed the suspense factor here. That was perfection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and this is an advantage of short stories too. And, you know, anthology films is the backstory isn't really spelled out.
Right.
You know, there's implications. You could connect dots and, you know, come up with whatever you want to. But I really like how they just kind of jump right in. And you know what? The past doesn't really matter.
No. You don't need to know every little detail. And I think that's where a lot of people screw up short stories, really, is trying to give you too much. And that you need to just jump in. And people can skate by with enough details to be like, okay, there's clearly, like, it was acted so well. It was very evident. There was bad blood between these two chicks and between this guy. And they were all very fearful of one another.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't have to know every detail of what happened. I've seen, there's a lot of speculation as to who had what job, I think, like what their backstories were on the internet.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't, like, it doesn't even matter because
the
story works.
Right.
You don't
right.
have to create a backstory here. We get it.
I think it said, like, Wikipedia talked about her being a call girl.
Yeah, well, even in the IMDb intro I just read, like, they call her a call girl, I think.
Yeah.
So, I don't know where you get that from.
Watching it with modern eyes, like, I didn't see evidence of that.
No, it just looked like a girl in a nice apartment, you know? That's all I got from it. That was it.
So, we went through the standouts. The only setback I would mention is the music doesn't always fit what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
It's not the best score. It sounds, at some places, it sounds like a little sleazy.
Do you think that's them trying to be like, guess she's a call girl? Like, this is a pimp that's gotten out of jail? Like, what?
I don't know. And what was weird is for the American version, they did a completely different score, but it was still, I listened to it and it still sounded kind of like jazzy.
Huh. You that's know. Weird.
It was different. I mean, I guess that was the only thing that wasn't modern.
Right, right.
You know, it was more of this 19...
slinky kind of sound.
Yeah, right, right. So let's talk about the Verdalak.
All right, story number two, the Verdalak or the Wordalak, depends on how you pronounce your W's. Definitely has an Eastern European feel to it.
Uh-huh. Apparently that's Russian.
Oh, it's Russian. Okay, well, that's close. It's Eastern European. That's, that's it. That works. Yeah, so basically, it's a vampire story, right?
Right.
We've got this family. Some creature has been, or person, a terrible person has been, I don't know, messing with everybody on this mountainside.
Mm-hmm.
So the dad, the patriarch of the family, goes out and says, if I'm not back in 5 days, or if I come back past 5 days, basically kill me.
Yeah.
And you have to stab me in the heart.
Right.
So, of course, we have a, you know, an unknowing stranger that stumbles across a dead body, brings it to the nearest house. Well, it's the house of this family whose dad is missing.
Right.
And they're like, you can't stay here. If my father comes back, bad things are going to happen.
Right.
You got to go.
So he's intrigued, and he's even more intrigued when he sees a lovely lady there.
Yes, the beautiful girl.
The beautiful girl. And
Sedenka, is that her name?
Stenka. We'll Sedenka? Say Sedenka. Give
well,
her
don't
her brain.
Say Stenka.
Stenka.
That sounds unflattering. Sedenka.
But to add tension to this segment, the dad shows up literally while the clock is striking. It's been exactly 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
He's got like a piercing through his chest region,
the wound
where his heart should be, and everyone's looking at him like, trying to figure out, are you a vampire?
Yeah, well, clearly he's warned them. Like, if I don't come back before the 5 days is up, if I've been up on the mountain for 5 days and then I come back, we got trouble. You're going to have to do away with me. And so I think it's, that seems kind of natural. Like, the whole family's like, but it's dad. Do we kill dad? Like,
yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, we'll get to standouts in a second, but Boris Karloff is amazing.
Yeah.
Even though I'm listening to an Italian man's voice and it's not Boris's voice, his eyebrows are like a character of their own.
They are. Oh my gosh. Yes, they really are.
But he's like, why does no one embrace me? And I've been gone for 5 days.
Everybody's standing around like, what do we do with him? I don't know. Is he safe?
So, yeah, you're looking at him and you kind of, we're watching this movie and we know it's a scary movie. He's probably not okay.
Right.
But you can kind of sympathize where they're coming from. Like, they're trying to evaluate, like, is this guy okay?
You told us to kill you.
Yeah. So they're looking at each other and he comes and sits down. And of course, he wants to hold his grandson.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, I don't know.
Don't touch the grandbaby.
Bite him on the neck and drink his blood or something.
Right.
But they give in, and you know, it's a little weird because even like his dog's barking and he's like, somebody go shut that dog up. And no one listens to him. And he's like, you don't listen to me anymore.
Yeah.
He tells his oldest son, he throws him a gun. He says, go kill the dog. He's like, but dad, that's your favorite dog. I said, go kill the dog.
Yeah. Like, how many clues do we need that Boris ain't doing so well? Like, he clearly was on the mountain too long.
Something's not right with dad.
Well, he said at the very beginning when he comes back, and he's like, you know, no one's going to embrace me. What's going on? And then the one daughter is like, hey, you're bleeding. Like, let me take care of that. And he's like, get away from me. Don't touch me, you know?
Yeah.
And then he's like, go kill my favorite dog. And then it was like somebody
tries to give him lamb.
Yeah. She's like made dinner. And he's like, I'm disgusted by this. Yeah. And like knocks it out of her hand or something. Yeah. Like, how many clues do we need? Like, okay, dad clearly didn't come out of this okay. Now what do we do?
But yeah, of course, there's a love story that goes on. And, you know, Prince Charming, I forget his name. But
the guy who came out of the woods and had found the original dead body. Whatever his name was, he instantly falls madly in love with Sedanka.
Yeah.
And apparently she's the only unmarried daughter.
That's right. The other daughter is married, and she's there with her husband.
Yeah,
and
the son-in-law's there.
Their child.
And their child. Yeah.
And there's some really good creepy aspects to this one.
And there's a little twist to the vampire thing here. They only go after, I won't say they only go after, but they want to turn all of their most loved family members into the Wurdalak vampire character also.
Yeah.
So
he thirsts for the blood of the people they love the most.
Right.
Which I thought was, yeah, like you just mentioned, it was a great twist on the vampire story.
Right.
I don't know if I've seen this or heard this anywhere else.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think I have.
I haven't. And it was cool. It makes a lot of sense, though. Like,
right.
You know, I'm undead and I want you to be undead.
Yeah, like, I want my family to come here with me.
Yeah, let's all be undead together.
Yeah.
And that's great at the end of just to fast forward, you know, who's going to love you like your family?
Right.
You know, it's like they come after the daughter, you know, that has run off with Prince Charming there. And, you know, basically, like, be with us. We're your family. No one loves you like your family.
That's right.
So standouts, we already mentioned Boris Karloff. I mean, he's the family patriarch.
His name is Gorka.
Gorka.
That's kind of fun.
And even with somebody overdubbing his voice, like, he's so expressive with his eyes.
Yeah, his eyebrows.
Susie Anderson plays Sedanka, the sister who tries to flee home with the young lad.
She doesn't make it very far.
And so I really loved Susie in this film for many reasons, but one was the whole time you're kind of wondering, is she turned or not? Is she already a vampire?
Yeah, they really kept you guessing on that. Because there were a few times where you saw her in the light and she was acting kind of cagey, like in a weird light, almost like firelight or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kind of cagey acting and the stranger was professing his love to her. And you're like, oh, she's about to bite him. Like, she must have already turned. And there's kind of a gray cast to her skin, which is what Boris Karloff had. And he's the first person in the movie we see turn.
Right.
And his skin has this, like, grayish kind of undead tint to it.
Yeah.
And there's a few times where the light hits her and her makeup looks gray.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh.
Yeah, she kind of looks...
Maybe they already turned her and she's about to bite the stranger.
Mm-hmm.
But then I guess that wasn't the case because she gets turned at the end and then turns the stranger.
Right.
Because he really loves her.
Yes. She looks beautiful and he loves her now.
Yes.
You know, and this is kind of the part of the 20th century films. Like, we love 20th century films, but some of the love stories are manufactured, right?
Very
like,
forced. Very forced.
You know, there's just this gorgeous girl that just happens to have nobody that's interested in her.
Yeah.
And then a man shows up and he is interested in her.
He was also gorgeous, of course. And he's like, not just interested in her. He's not like, hey, pretty lady here, I'm going to hang out and see what's going on. He's like, going to die for her from the second he lays eyes on her.
You know? He literally puts his life on the line for her.
Yeah, like, he could have been out of there. He didn't know this family. He owes them nothing. Like, he could have been like, well, there's some weird... Dad's acting real weird. I'm out. Yeah, I'm gone now.
And keep in mind, too, Dad's not just acting weird. Because he had
he's
a severed head.
He's killing his favorite dog.
He had a severed head in a bag.
Yeah.
And pulls it out.
This is his after-dinner party trick. He's like, oh, yeah, that guy's not going to bother us anymore. Here's his head.
Go hang this head out front.
Yeah. He's like, go decorate the front doorpost with this, okay?
It would have to be like some crazy good-looking girl to hang out, right?
I mean, she's very attractive, but not that attractive. Nobody's worth that kind of crazy.
Get on your horse and go, buddy.
Yeah, but he, like, his limited dialogue is all about how smitten he is with this girl. And that just, you know, that kind of kills it for me. I'm like, enough already. We get it.
Yeah.
You're going to follow her around like a puppy and do whatever she says.
Something else that works for this film, I think, is this folklore. And we've talked about this with Red Sonja, like how cultures kind of develop, you know, modern times when, like, we're all kind of aware what's happening around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you have a small community back in the olden days, like, you don't really know what's going on. And so they kind of develop their own folklore, their own.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like, mysteries that are going on, they're trying to figure out. And
well, I've already mentioned Shalimon earlier in this podcast, and now he's in my head again, because they did the same thing in the village, right?
Yeah.
They developed their own folklore because they were trying to stay isolated. They were trying to keep their own culture from being indoctrinated or infiltrated by the modern society.
Yeah, yeah. Were there any setbacks that you could think of for this segment?
Yeah, again, just that forced love story was the biggest setback for me. That always is just like, womp, womp. When I see it, I'm like, oh, not this again, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, they made some dumb mistakes. Like, the little boy ran off into the... He didn't run off. Grandpa stole the little boy and took him off into the woods. And then they find his body. Well, they know if Grandpa had him, he's got to be undead now or whatever. He's got to be Wurdalak.
Right.
And so the mom could not let the dad stab the little... Because you have to stab him in the heart, apparently, as part of this mythology. Would not let him do that. So then in the middle of the night, you know, they'd had the body laid out for burial or whatever of this little boy. In the middle of the night, she hears him calling, Mama, Mama. And they look out, and he's out in the snow, and he's banging at the door. He's cold, you know. And it just that whole... There's like a sequence of bad choices there. They should have taken care of things, just like they... I mean, they already made that mistake with Dad, right? They should have killed Dad from the beginning, and they didn't. You know, so now the little boy is the same. And I get it. The mom, that's her baby. She doesn't want to do that. But she's like, you know, the dad's saying, no, you can't go to him. He's tainted. He's whatever. And she's like, I'll kill you if you don't let me go. And she stabs the dad with a pair of scissors. I'm like, wow, she meant what she said, I guess. Like, it seemed a little much.
It was a little over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I get that horror films, you know, they make bad decisions. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a horror film.
Right, exactly.
But that was a little over the top.
Exactly.
Yeah, so many dumb decisions. Like Sedenka, when she was outside in the convent area, leaving her new boyfriend.
Oh, right. They went and hid.
Yeah.
To get away from the crazy and being turned.
And she goes wandering.
And she goes in the middle of the night, in the freezing cold, she goes wandering off to, you know, see what the heck is going on. And then, of course, what's going to happen? Grandpa finds her.
Yep.
And, you know, that's all she wrote.
So the third segment was called The Drop of Water.
Mm-hmm. I did not realize that was the title of it until after we had watched it. Now it makes sense, but it probably would have been helpful if I knew that was the title while I was watching that segment.
Yeah.
All right. So the synopsis here is we clearly have this nurse lady. The time period, it looks a little Victorian-esque maybe.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is an Italian drama, so...
Yeah. Well, apparently these three stories take place in three different generations.
Oh, okay.
The first one... Was like a modern, you know, 1960s.
Yeah.
The Boris Karloff segment was like 19th century.
Yes, at least. Maybe earlier.
And then this one, I think, was in the, like another generation later.
Okay, so early 1900s, probably. We see this lady. She definitely looks a little hard, you know, down on her luck, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
She's in a crummy apartment. She's, you know, like it seems like the weather's bad. She's having a lot of booze for dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, she gets a phone call.
Yeah.
You know, old school, really old looking telephone or whatever, gets a phone call. Somebody needs her to come right away. They need her nurse's services. It must be middle. I don't know if it's middle of the night, but it seems like it is. And the weather's really bad, snowy, cold, you know, whatever. So she's got to go. So she gets to this mansion looking type place, judging by the rooms, but it looks like Mrs. Havisham's, you know, what's the Great Expectations.
Okay.
You know, like cobwebs are covering it. Like it looked
very
really,
run down.
Yeah, very run down. Probably really, really nice at one time, but there's cats everywhere and there's cobwebs that are like larger than my house in this place, right? So come to find out, the old lady that owned the mansion has died. The maid that has, looks like the only person that stuck it out with this old lady, needs the nurse's assistant to like get her dressed and like prepared for death or burial or whatever.
Right.
So the nurse is like, okay, I'm great. She seems very reluctant. She doesn't want to do this. But when she goes to start dressing the old lady, first of all, we get this glimpse of the dead lady's face. Wow.
Yeah, that was like, it's a shocker.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I mean, she doesn't look like she just died. She looks like she's been dead a while.
Yeah. Well,
it's pretty terrifying.
Like, you know, the way it was done, I guess it was like a latex mold or something.
Yeah, it looked like almost like a wax museum type thing.
And it was the only time that we both audibly like made a noise, because they kind of do this quick zoom in on this really terrible looking face. You're like, ah!
Yeah. I mean, you're expecting a dead person, but you're not, like, her eyes are open, her cheeks are sunken. She's almost like greenish almost looking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we find out too that her and her friends like communed with the dead.
Oh, so yeah. The dead lady was very much into tarot cards and trying to speak to the dead and, you know, Ouija boards and whatever.
Right.
So into she was dark a medium. Arts. Yes. Yes. So our nurse friend from the beginning of the story here, she sees this beautiful, I think it was a blue stone ring, like some big gemstone ring on this lady's hand. And as we know from the beginning of the short story, like this lady's pretty hard on her luck. Like she's probably could use the money this ring would get her, or maybe she just wants something pretty. I don't know.
Who knows?
But she clearly has her eye on this ring. And so she goes through her little, you know, like, I'm going to help you with this lady. The maid doesn't really want to get close to the body. She's kind of freaked out.
Can't blame her. Yep.
Yeah. Can't blame her there. So the nurse sneaks the ring, puts it in her pocket or somewhere. I don't remember where she puts it.
Yeah.
And then finishes the job and gets the heck out of there. Yeah.
And almost instantly, there's this drop of water that she hears.
Oh, wait. There was actually a hole. Yes.
A fly that shows up. It's like a big horse fly too. It's not
it's a big fly. Like it's gross, nasty blow fly.
Yeah, it's bugging her right away. You know, these two things.
There was kind of a little comedy that happened here, right?
Uh-huh.
Because she's the maid is keeping her distance. She doesn't want to have anything to do with the dead body. The nurse is trying to steal this ring and be very discreet about it. But she drops it. Remember when she kind of has to pry it off the old lady's finger. And when it finally like lets go, she drops it and it goes under the nightstand. Uh-huh. So she bends down to the floor. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
She bends over on the floor to get it. And the old lady's hand, like the dead lady, flops off the bed and smacks her in the back of the head. And it's like a jump scare, you know,
but
then it's like, oh my gosh, she just got smacked by the old lady who she's stealing from.
Yeah.
And then you start hearing, like you said, the drop of water. Well, there's like a sink that's been left on or something. I don't remember. Or maybe, no,
they knocked
a cup.
Over some water.
That's
or
right.
Whatever. Yeah.
When she knocked over a cup. So it was dripping water. And it was like she's hearing it in an echo chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, the fly lands on the old lady's finger right where the ring should have been. Oh, my gosh. Like it's creepy, but it's comical at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
And then fast forward, she goes back home.
To her crappy apartment.
She starts hearing drops of water.
Yep.
She sees the big horse fly again.
Yeah, the horse fly is buzzing like crazy loud, by the way.
And it gets creepier and creepier. Basically, she sees the medium show up.
Yeah, so the
in different
creepy
places.
Old lady's face, the dead lady's face keeps showing up.
Yeah. And yeah, of course, it ends with her demise.
Yes.
It looks like she strangled herself to death.
Well, we see that at the very end, the old lady, the dead lady's face is there, and it's and she's reaching towards the nurse, and it's like she has some sort of mind control over her and makes mm-hmm. her use her own hands to strangle herself to death.
Right.
Which has got to be a terrible way to go.
Yeah.
But I love that at the end, you know, the I don't know if she's the landlord or of a neighbor or what.
Right.
But she, somebody hears all this commotion, can't get any answer from the nurse. And so she calls the cops. They break into the apartment. Well, there's the nurse dead on the ground, looking like she strangled herself. Uh-huh. And she's got this beautiful ring on her finger. And the landlady instantly is like, oh.
Yeah, that's yeah. for me.
Yeah. Well, you don't actually. No, wait. I might be messing that up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when they show up, the lady's explaining.
Yeah,
that, oh,
I just found her like this. She's. I don't
I
know
didn't
what
touch
happened.
Anything. I've seen. You know.
That's
I've seen
right.
these things.
She's like, I didn't touch anything. I haven't touched anything. The cops didn't even ask her if she touched anything. But
they
like,
see
I didn't
the dead
anything.
Lady basically has had evidence of a ring on her finger.
Yes.
Because it looked like the skin had been kind of you know worn
yeah,
off.
Yeah, like
there
someone
a
had. Had manhandled her to get the ring off is what yeah. it looked like. So like, are you sure? You
and the
touch
faces
anything?
That lady makes too is funny. Like yeah. she's trying to look not guilty.
Yeah, it's just very failing, failing miserably at that. But then just before that segment ends, like the landlord lady starts hearing the landlady. I guess we call
landlady.
It.
Yeah,
yeah. Starts hearing the buzzing sound and the dripping sound.
Yeah,
it's like the cycle's going to start all over again. And
right.
Boom, that's the end.
Mm-hmm. So my first standout I'll throw out there is Nurse Helen Chester, played by Jacqueline Perreault. A lot of this is kind of a one-man show.
Yes, very much. Absolutely. Her just how she interacted really with her surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
You could just tell, like, this lady's not having a great life.
Mm-hmm.
She needs some money. She's lonely.
Yeah.
Things are not great for her.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, she's a standout in just the way she acted in this. A lot of it was just nonverbal.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think she did a great job. I'd say for me, the standout is still that first shot of the medium's face, the first dead lady's
oh,
face.
Oh, yeah.
That initial shot of her. Now, that'll take us into one of our setbacks, but the initial shot of that face was like, whoa, like,
yeah,
it's creepy. It had a jump factor.
It did.
For sure. The problem comes in, the setback comes in, is they used it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And then as they start trying to like move the body around, all of a sudden she appears at the nurse's apartment. It gets flakier and flakier because
yeah.
it's just not very Because
her
believable.
Face isn't changing. It's that same mold they used.
Yeah.
It's the same face.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's like a wax doll is following this lady around.
Yeah, you're right. I think it started getting comical.
Yeah.
All right. This isn't scary anymore.
Right.
Well, you and I talked about, there's an old trick, right, with these old monster movies is don't show the monster. Don't bring him into the light.
Exactly. Keep the monster in the dark.
Keep him in the dark. Keep us scared. And I think it was great. They did that one zoom in on the face and it scared the crap out of us. But that should have been it. After that, it ought to have been just suggestions.
Right. Absolutely.
But, well, you know, hindsight's 2020. It was 1963.
Sure.
It was a long time ago.
They're figuring these things out.
But this was a good one. Apparently, you know, a lot of the people that saw this years and years ago, this is the segment they remember the most because
really?
That jump scare of that lady's face, you know, is what they
stuck
recall.
With them.
And I imagine if we watch this with our youngest, this is probably the scene that he would remember the most.
Yes, yes. He would hate that face.
Mm-hmm. One setback for this film overall I'll throw out there is the intro and the outro segments. They were just kind of goofy.
Yeah, I honestly, the intro was okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't fantastic, but it wasn't horrible. But then it gets real silly. The outro is like, wait a minute, was this supposed to be like Haunted Mansion, Disney style? Because
it's Boris Karloff
yeah.
riding on a fake horse.
Yeah, with fake scenery going by.
Fake scenery.
And the camera's panning away, like zooming out. So you can tell like he's on a fake horse. Like you're seeing the studio action.
Yeah.
He's on a fake horse. There's guys over here on the side making it look like he's running through the trees with lights and
yeah.
shadows, trees on sticks, you know, whatever, running past him in a circle. And he's kind of, I don't know, giving
They start playing some goofy, happy music.
Yeah, yeah. It's a shtick, you know,
yeah.
like, I don't know. Like, what? It's
it
like,
really
where did
out
that
of
come
nowhere.
From? Yeah, exactly.
And I, you know, I'd heard or read that the studio felt like it was a little too scary. And
oh.
so they needed to do something to dial it back a little bit. And this was their way of saying, hey, you know, this is just all fun and games.
It's all for fun.
Yeah,
yuck,
these
yuck,
people
yuck.
Didn't really die.
Yeah.
We're making a movie here, folks.
That's funny. I wonder why. I don't know. Were the Italians really squeamish?
Like, I don't know.
But easily spooked?
Watching it with modern eyes, like, it was just, I don't know. I wish they didn't do that intro and they didn't do that outro.
They didn't need it. They really didn't need it at all.
Mm-mm.
No.
Mm-mm.
They could have even had, like, if they wanted to do some sort of introduction to explain that it's going to be three short stories, they could have done that with just scrolling font.
Yeah.
You didn't need Boris Karloff or anybody else. And mm-hmm. honestly, it probably takes away from Boris Karloff's character in the Wordalak a little bit.
Yeah.
To have him as the intro and outro guy.
Yeah.
Especially the outro guy, because that was the silliest one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they did what they did.
Yeah. And, that's how it was.
And there still is validity, I think. There's just so many little glimpses in each of these stories that you see happen again in so many other modern tellings
mm-hmm.
of these very similar stories. So I think it left its mark for sure.
Yeah.
Even with the silliness.
I agree. So we come down to final summations.
Mm-hmm.
This is the moment of truth. Is this a yay or a nay?
I'll say yay for me. It felt very reminiscent of like a Saturday afternoon creature feature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the short story format because you're not getting super involved in a really creepy story. It's short, quick, to the point, and you're like, it's just enough creep, and then I can move on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like I said, like I do see glimpses of these stories told over and over and over again in the modern genre.
Right.
So obviously he was onto something.
So of the three, how would you rank the three segments?
Ooh. I'd say my personal favorite was the telephone one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the drop of water. And the Wordalak was probably my least favorite.
Okay. That's interesting. Because the Wordalak was probably my favorite. And then the telephone. And then the last one, the drop of water.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm always drawn to that kind of gothic look and feel. Right. And that's what the Wordalak did.
I like the ghost story kind of aspect of the drop of water. Like it had that very like campfire ghost story,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
like in the, you know, the lady with the ring heard the drop of water or, you know, whatever.
But this story or this movie is very much like Black Sunday. If you were going to have a Halloween party and you wanted something on and playing in the background
that
gives that creepy thing
ambiance.
Oh, yeah. This movie would be right on.
It has it, for sure.
But yeah, I'm with you. It's a yay for me. I'm all about it. I really like this kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. They're fun to watch, and they're not overly terrifying, so...
Yeah. It won't scar you for life watching it.
No, we know that I'm a bit squeamish on the scare factor, so this I can watch, and I think it's fun, and just enough creep to be interesting and not scar me.
We have some posts on our Instagram.
Okay.
One from Barry Dufresne. Love this movie, and took me a while to figure out what the title of this film was from my childhood. I saw it as a kid watching it at night with my mom. Loved the whole look of the movie, and seeing Boris ride the horse is so creepy. But the dead witch part scared both my mom and me to death. I had nightmares so many years afterwards from this one. The sound of dripping water still haunts me.
Oh man, he was affected by this movie.
Yes. Do you have a movie that affected you this way?
Yeah, well, Jaws for sure, because I had recurring nightmares about sharks all the time as a kid.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I had an uncle that let us watch, was it called Piranhas? I don't remember what the name
was. Oh, there was a movie, Piranhas, yeah.
Yeah, it had piranhas in it, I'd say in the 80s, I don't know. And the same uncle also let us watch It one time. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I may have had clowns on the wallpaper in our bedroom as children. That was a little terrifying.
Yeah, hard to sleep in that room.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it was The Twilight Zone, 1986.
Oh, yeah.
The Gremlin on the Wing.
Yeah, there's something on the wing.
So I saw that before I saw the old Twilight Zone show, and I had nightmares for weeks about that one.
Oh, yeah, it's very creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now when I see that gremlin thing, though, it's kind of comical, but...
But even the one from the movie?
Well, no, the one from the movie is definitely more creepy than the one from the show.
Yeah, the one from the show is pretty silly.
Yeah. You're right. The one from the movie is definitely creepier.
Yeah. Maybe we should cover the Twilight Zone.
We should cover the Twilight Zone. We love the Twilight Zone. I think we talk about the Twilight Zone almost every episode.
So you mentioned dreams about Jaws. My friend John used to have a recurring dream of Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's in like a John boat.
Oof.
And
he's
going to
need a bigger boat.
Yeah. He's with the chief's wife. So it's kind of like he's the chief.
Oh.
And he's just freaking out because he can see the shark is circling their boat.
Oh, not good. I think my recurring nightmare had more to do. Was it Jaws 3 where they were like at a SeaWorld type situation? Mm-hmm. That was more a part of my recurring dream than anything from the original. I don't know why that one, but yeah. I was always at like a SeaWorld type setting. Yeah,
we live in Florida, so going to SeaWorld, I could see that. Yeah, that's
true. Did a lot of that.
So thank you, Barry, for that. Mike Freeman, 77. I love this anthology horror movie. The episode with Boris Karloff as a vampire is great. The one about the killer taunting the hooker isn't bad, but it was the episode with the ghost of the dead witch that scared me to death as a little kid.
None of us like that witch.
Mario Bava was a great horror director.
Yeah. Okay, I'm seeing another person picking up on the fact that that lady was supposed to be a hooker or a call girl or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did he know that if he saw this as a kid? Because I clearly...
Somehow we missed it. Other than reading IMDb and Wikipedia.
Yeah, we missed that whole...
Which wasn't available for people back in, you know, the Boris Karloff era.
Yeah.
Like, were there some sort of social clues...
That we're clueless about?
Yeah, that we didn't pick up.
It just
looked like pretty girl comes home.
A stalker situation, but I didn't read hooker situation into that. So yeah. I don't know.
And then the film theorists, never saw it, but need to. It's where the band got its name.
Yep.
Definitely. So what are we watching next week?
Next week, we will be watching a horror comedy called High Spirits from 1988. It's got Peter O'Toole. It's got Steve Guttenberg. It's got Daryl Hannah and probably a lot of other faces people recognize that are close to our age.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a failing Irish castle that is the ancestral home of Peter O'Toole's character.
Mm-hmm.
And he is not keeping it afloat. It's supposed to be running as like an Airbnb type situation or a hotel, but it's falling in disrepair. He doesn't have enough guests to keep it open. And basically the bank's going to come and take it away if he doesn't do something. So his big plan is to pretend it's a haunted mansion and to draw in revenue that way. But there's a whole bunch of crazy hijinks where his little ghost tricks fail and silly things happen. But then they find out there are actually two ghosts in the hotel, maybe more, or in the castle, I should say. And a romance ensues between the living and the non-living. And it's just a good, silly, fun 1980s movie.
Yay. Yeah, that'll be great. So watch that this week and then listen in next week for our review of the film.
That's right.
Until then, we will talk to you later.
All right. Enjoy your movie watching. Peace out.
Peace out.